Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Good news, bad news, and just some crazy news for conservatives to chew over here at the lunch hour on Tuesday. And Jim, the good news is pretty much the same good news we talked about on Monday, only in a different vein. We talked about how on Monday the American people still very much in support of repealing the president's health care plan. Judge Roger Vinson in Florida later on Monday saying, I'll help you with that because the individual mandate is unconstitutional. And as a result, the whole house of cards comes tumbling down, although that wasn't the exact judicial language. But that's a victory for 26 states in that case. Virginia has already won on its challenge, so that's 27 states now, and it looks like the momentum once again in favor of those who actually like the Constitution.
Yeah, I think one of the things that becomes increasingly clear, Greg, is that as we watch the Obamacare fans and liberals respond to this, I don't think they really took this challenge that seriously, and now it's getting a lot more momentum than I think they ever expected. Most notable was Ezra Klein famously saying the Constitution was too hard to understand, saying that, you know, it was strange that he was invalidating the entire – all of Obamacare, not just the individual mandate, even though the legislation itself didn't include the traditional provision that if one part of this is struck down as unconstitutional, everything else stays in place. Because the defenders of Obamacare had said, look, without the individual mandate, you just can't make all of these reforms work. It's refreshing, and I think it's kind of interesting that each time this argument goes further, and Vinson kind of really, you know, really wrote this out the way he knew this would be the single most scrutinized decision he's ever made, just kind of, you know, went soup to nuts, tried to lay it out as clearly as possible. I think my favorite bit is the footnote that quotes then-candidate Obama talking about how bad an idea the individual mandate was. And I think this is going to get to the Supreme Court, and as usual, it will depend on the coin flip that is Justice Kennedy.
Right.
But the scale is really big. That it was if you know there's a 5-4 decision saying that Obamacare is constitutional, then Greg, you could stretch the Commerce Clause to you know include just about anything. It's exciting and invigorating for opponents of Obamacare and for those who believe that in constitutional limits on government. But it's also a little bit ominous that if we lose this one, then you know. The precedent has been set that the government can, you know, make you buy health insurance and basically make you do anything else under the name of regulating commerce.
Yeah, just a little bit on the line when this does come to the Supreme Court. I find it interesting that folks like Congressman Anthony Weiner out there crying that this is the worst case of judicial activism that he's ever seen. And you know, they love these cases where judges just create out a whole cloth, writes that weren't enumerated and just basically advance a social cause because it happens to be in vogue on the liberal side. And so it's interesting when you got a judge like Vinson who's quoting the Constitution, quoting the Federalist Papers, in addition to alluding to something Obama said, that that's judicial activism, but all these other things aren't.
Greg, I realize I'm, you know, casting pearls before swine here, but you know, did Weiner even say like what he thought made this judicial activism?
No, he just said it was clearly constitutional. This provision is clearly constitutional.
Okay, based on the authority of Anthony Weiner, you know. Le Constitution, c'est moi. Because, you know, when conservative or generally, you know, look, there's an argument to be made that over the years, judicial activism has become a synonym for I don't like this decision, which I think is probably the best way to describe what Anthony Weiner is saying.
Right.
But traditionally, conservatives said it's like, oh, no, you are stepping into the role of legislators. You are rewriting the law. You are attempting to craft laws from the bench, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, this is explicitly what the courts are for, which is Congress has passed a law. People argue that it violates the U.S. Constitution and is thus, you know, invalid, cannot go forward. And this is what the judges are there for. If not this, I don't understand what. So, you know, when Weiner says this, it's obvious it's constitutional. Well, not to Vinson, not to the judge in Florida or Virginia, not to 26 state attorney generals, not to, you know, a big chunk of the American public. I mean, you know. Weiner has to appeal to a site authority a little higher than his gut to justify this.
On to number two now, and I have a feeling this is going to be number two for a while as we watch all this unfold in the Middle East. Yesterday it was what might replace Mubarak eventually in Egypt. Now we see that this is spreading to Jordan, another Arab state that we have a pretty good relationship with, and King Abdullah firing his prime minister, his deputy prime minister. Seems like he's either trying to get ahead of the curve or maybe playing catch-up. It's hard to know at this point, but we certainly don't want to see this spreading beyond where it's already spread.
So, Greg, I'm going to start out with a simple question. What's the U.S. policy on this?
Apparently, it's silent since Friday, and otherwise we were kind of vaguely for democracy, but not too fast, and we told him to try and work on this beforehand, so we warned him, and it just hasn't happened yet, so it's his fault.
I'm asking my liberal friend, so what do you think our position is? What are we pushing for? What, you know, when you read, you know, statements from Hillary and from Obama and from other U.S. officials, what are we pushing for? And they can't tell me. And, you know, obviously, look, there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We want to see the people respected, but we acknowledge Mubarak has been a friend, but we feel a need for a transition, but we don't want to see, you know, it's, it, you know, and each one of these diplomatic statements is so carefully equivocal that it ends up becoming mush. And now we're seeing a rapid, you know, sequence of events. I mean, you know, Tunisia changes its government and, you know, the American government can kind of, you know, blithely ignore that. It spreads to Egypt. It spreads to Jordan, one of our closest allies in the region. Now we've got a really big problem and a serious challenge to our interests in the region. And I feel like I'm waiting for the president to really take the lead on this and to really make a, you know, offer some sort of concrete statement other than these, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that statements. And I recognize the U.S. has limited power to influence events over there. On the other hand, Greg, this is the guy we were told was going to revolutionize America's relationship with the Muslim world.
That's right.
We were electing a son of a Kenyan farmer who had the middle name Hussein. The Muslim world was going to be suddenly much more receptive to what the American president had to say. And now all of a sudden he's got laryngitis, it seems. So that one big speech in Cairo,
right.
And I guess that was kind of the end of our dealing with Egypt on these sorts of matters. So I'm very frustrated by this. I have this nagging suspicion that Obama is going to appoint a blue ribbon commission of experts to study the problem and get back to us in about 12 months. Jeff Emanuel, one of the contributors to Red State, had said on Twitter today, Obama's decision-making capacity just cannot keep pace with events. At first, we were, you know, Hillary and he were coming out and saying the Egyptian government was stable. When on our televisions, we were seeing millions of people go into the streets and say and make very clear the government was not stable. Now we're trying to say we want to see reforms long after it became very clear that these crowds are well beyond any reforms. They don't trust Mubarak. They don't think he'll really enact any serious changes. As I wrote in the Jolt this morning, maybe Mubarak is running the country on like a week from Tuesday. Is he running the country in 5 years? Kind of hard, really hard to see that.
Right.
The man's 82. And, you know, probably until the day he dies, people will be trying to kill him in his country. So we need a plan for post-Mubarak really fast. And I'm kind of stunned that the administration, whose you know, expertise in foreign affairs is endlessly touted, is saying to Politico off the record that they're trying to get their handle on this.
Yeah.
Surprise,
yeah.
Surprise. It's,
yeah.
as if he's a community organizer and doesn't know anything about foreign affairs, Greg, but I know that's not the case.
Yeah, hard to believe that that concern came true in almost a record time. On to the third martini now, and just a couple minutes left to talk about this, and kind of an interesting development in the 2012 race. We'll see if it actually happens, but it's not often that you see an employee or a member of the administration that's about to be challenged in the upcoming presidential race actually become the challenger. Basically, John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, Republican, named by Obama to be the ambassador to China. Now he's announcing that he is resigning, effective, I believe, in April. And a lot of people expect him to run for president, which I don't expect him to do all that well. But his experience in the Obama administration could be a treasure trove of information for whoever is the nominee.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. I back on Friday, Greg, I had, you know, posted from one of my regulars who had noticed this and saw that the buzz was starting to get louder and saying, really? Our ambassador in Beijing is planning to run for president against his boss? Doesn't that seem weird to anyone? And you know, shouldn't he really do his business or get off the pot? You know, either you're working for the guy,
right,
or you're trying to replace him. It's really kind of tough to do both simultaneously. To say nothing of probably not healthy for our dealings with China to have
right.
two guys who are, you know, secretly, you know, rivals. And so I'd like to say campaign spot caused that to happen, but not even I would believe that. But it is good that Huntsman has, you know, made this decision, and that we're not going to be in this kind of bizarre trying to do two things simultaneously. What I could see Huntsman really making a splash, Greg, because everyone's saying, oh, look, he worked for Obama. There's no way that'll play well in a GOP primary. Picture that first debate when some other candidate kind of tries to take it to Huntsman, be it, you know, Romney or Barber or Pawlenty or somebody, and he says, you know, I got to say, the reason I decided to run for president was I was in the inside and I could see how bad a job Obama was doing. I tried to get him to focus on this, and he kept saying he wanted to give an iPod full of his speeches to Hu Jintao, and he didn't understand anything, and he kept saying, well, look, I'll go over there and give a big speech, and everything will be fixed. And I just knew that if I wanted to help this country, I had to run for president and get this guy out of office as quickly as possible. He will have a unique weight as a critic of Obama, having worked for him and having been on the inside. And, it's an interesting resume for a guy. Clearly, he's got a bit of an uphill climb, but a nice variety in the resume of a successful governor and foreign policy experience. And, oh, by the way, a personal fortune that he can dip into if necessary. I would not completely, totally dismiss Huntsman at this early point. We'll see how this thing shakes out. But some interesting unique talents he can bring to the table in a very wide open race.
Absolutely wide open. There's just a lot of names being thrown out there right now. Jim, again, a lot to chew over. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.